This shy 15-year-old barely had her first kiss when this handsome, charming, popular guy at school wanted to date her. She thought she found the love of her life, just like her parents had at that age. But then things started to turn and twist. Whitley Rogers' behavior became erratic. She became confused and depressed. Then she made a dramatic and vulnerable move that launched her into an entire new world. Hi, I'm Rosie Aiello, and welcome to the Vulnerable to Valuable podcast. We talk about moving forward after experiencing narcissistic, controlling, demeaning, and abusive relationships. If you've been in one of those, like me, you know what I'm talking about. You're not alone. You've been through some painful stuff. Shame, blame, that inner bully inside you. My mission is to lift and inspire you. Give you the ways you can reclaim your voice and value, your confidence, and the courage to be the new empowered you. My youngest so far, Whitley Rogers, is wise beyond her years. Her story is one of strength, empowerment, and courage. We're going to talk to Whitley Rogers in a moment, and first, a mini masterclass. Today, I tap into freedom fulfillment pillar number 3, what's important to you, what your values are. So be sure to grab your copy of all 11 freedom fulfillment pillars. Just go to theloveiskindnetwork.com/podcasts or just simply vulnerabletovaluable.com. My guest on today's episode had an experience with a narcissistic boyfriend at a very young age. You'll soon hear how she got out of that stranglehold and moved forward in her life. It's quite astounding. Her story just shows that a narcissist is formed at a very young age, and they show all the same signs as a quote-unquote mature narcissist. So you'll see the behaviors are similar whether they are just young or not. And when narcissistic boys grow up, they become narcissistic men who continue to destroy lives in their path. So if you see the signs of a narcissistic young man, speak up. He may have a chance to turn his life around so that he can become a loving and kind person and really to experience love, because a narcissist does not ever truly experience love. Parents need to intercede when their child is under 18. When they're over 18, there's no control. We know that parents want to think best of their kids. This is normal. They don't want their child's life ruined. I get it. But I work with women whose lives have been affected by that narcissist. They live a life of hell sometimes for decades because what happened to them. In the meantime, the narcissist just continues to run wild and free without any awareness or care of what he has done to another human being. You know, what happens? People believe in and support the narcissist because he is notable, important, or in some other high position. It could be a high school football star or an attorney or a police officer, a judge, a CEO. You get the idea. Their position alone presumes that they are better than. So people assume they are without fault, and so it must be the girl's or the woman's fault. This is a wrong belief to uphold. But this is what we face as women every single day. That's why speaking up and knowing your truth is important. And yes, it takes a lot of courage. But what is the trade-off? What is true for you? What do you believe in? The trade-off is you living a lie about who you are. It's denying your authentic self. It's about you believing that others are more important than you. It's about you giving up on your dreams as if they aren't valid. It's about you believing that there is no way out. It's about you giving up on your life. Listen, Your life matters. You matter. You are worthy. You are lovable. And I believe in you. I believe in you. You have to believe in yourself. And you begin to believe in yourself when you know what your values are. You believe in those values that you have, that you have identified and chosen. And you own those values. You own those values, a technique I teach my clients that instantly elevates themselves. There's no reason for you to ever end up in a narcissistic relationship again. I'm an example of what's possible. If you don't know or remember, I engineered an international escape from the Middle East after a 25-year relationship. And I have created a life, let me tell you, I could have never imagined. And I'm with the love of my life, the kind love. He is the kind love of my life, a love and kindness for which I am so utterly grateful. And I created this and I have this because of the work I did on myself for myself. And no, it's not being narcissistic or selfish. It's the thing you must do. And you can do this. And if you want to know how, then reach out to me. Go to vulnerabletovaluable.com. Click on the show notes for this episode. Go to my website, theloveiskind.com. Click on the courses, ways to get a hold of me so we can have a conversation. I don't want anyone listening to this to think there's no way out, to think that, oh, no one's going to ever love me, or I don't want to ever be with a man. I can't trust a man. I had all of those thoughts. But that true self, that one that got buried, is going to keep wondering, I want to be connected to somebody, but you want to be safe. I get it. You can go here. You can do this. The only way to move forward and create an impact in your life is to know where you're at, where you want to go, and what's holding you back. Get started by taking the Freedom Fulfillment Quiz. In 4 short minutes, you'll discover where you are, where you want to be, and what you'll need to do. If you're serious about evolving into a new empowered you who can show up as that confident woman she once was or wants to be, then start now. Your life is waiting for you. Go to freedomfulfillmentquiz.com. Today, we're going to meet Whitley Rogers, a dynamic young woman who is co-founder of the End the Stigma, a mental health foundation. She's a certified life coach and a survivor of sexual and mental abuse. Her story shows how when you have the right support, you can move forward from suicidal depression and anxiety to creating a fulfilling, productive, and purposeful life. Whitley Rogers will be here in a moment. And first, thank you for downloading the Vulnerable to Valuable podcast, produced by the Love is Kind Network. We're just starting out. Please subscribe. Every 5-star review on iTunes and every share will help our mission to impact 100 million women worldwide who have lost their voice, value, and authenticity in narcissistic, controlling, and abusive relationships. Will you help us achieve that goal? Now let's go from vulnerable to valuable with Whitley Rogers. Welcome, Whitley. I am so excited to hear your story and your journey.
Yeah, thank you for having me. It's an honor to be here.
So before we get started, I just want to let our listener know a little bit about you and how amazing you are at such a young age. So Whitley Rogers is a certified life coach, a mental health advocate, a survivor of sexual and mental abuse. She's a podcast host on In the Wake with Whitley and the co-founder of End the Stigma, a mental health foundation. Well, that is so wonderful that you have created that foundation to really talk about this thing. And I was telling you earlier, I was in a meeting today trying to bring out this topic and the stigma of what is all around it. And the more we talk about it, you know that the better it is for everybody. And that's the purpose of this podcast as well. So why don't you tell us a little bit about how you got into being a mental health advocate?
Sure. I was 15 when my abusers started pursuing me. I grew up in a very conservative religious community, and that's where I knew this boy from. And so I was a very innocent child. I was very shy, very quiet, and I had just barely gotten my first kiss that summer. So I didn't have much experience with intimate relationships at all. This was my very first relationship, and he was a year older than me, and I had known him for years prior because we had been going to the same church group. And he was a very charismatic, popular guy. You know, everyone adored him. All the girls wanted to date him, and he chose me. He started pursuing me, and that was so weird. I was like, what? You could have anyone. Why would you choose shy, little, innocent 15-year-old Whitley? And so he started love bombing me and, you know, like building me up.
With the love, I mean, I know what love bombing is, but maybe for people who haven't, I've used it on the show before, but just maybe like give us some examples of what a love bombing he did for you.
So he would just do big grand gestures, show up to my house with flowers and gifts and take me on super cute planned out dates. And I was a hopeless romantic, and that felt like he just adored me and wanted to provide the best relationship for me and experience. And, you know, he was giving me so much attention and so much love at the beginning. It was just like constant. And then it flipped and he started like stonewalling or ignoring me or taking that, you know, that affection and that attention away and breaking me down. He was building me up just to break me down again. And I was 15 when he started pursuing me. And then on my 16th birthday, we went on our first date. We had our first kiss, and he asked me to be his girlfriend all in one day. And so it happened really fast. And it just, you know, was too good to be true, honestly.
You weren't aware that it was too good to be true. You were, and then, you know, he came from which you felt safe. This was a safe community. This is somebody you knew, was in church. So you already, even if whether he was popular or not, it was already like, this should be safe. And we wouldn't, there's no reason for you to suspect. He wasn't like the bad boy at school or anything like that, right?
No, you would assume that you have the same values and standards and you're coming from the same church community. And I thought this was it, because my parents, they met at 16 and 17 and they're still together. They had their happily ever after. Yeah. And I was like, this is going to be my story. I found my guy at 16 and he is perfect. By the book, he seemed perfect. You know, he was religious and he was a straight A student, super smart, a very talented piano player, and, you know, just like checked all the boxes on paper. And it felt like an amazing first relationship the first few months. And then it just changed, like it flipped. And I thought, who is this person that I'm dating? I don't recognize you. This isn't the person that I signed up for. And so it always felt like something I did. I provoked him to make him act out in this certain way. So if I just do better and be better, then I can get back to the guy that I had fallen in love with in the beginning. And it's not abusive 24/7 because, or it's not abusive on the first date, because then you most likely wouldn't stay. And it's like a roller coaster of building me back up and, you know, showering me with that love and attention. just to break me down and mentally abuse me and sexually abuse me. And then when I'm so broken, he needs to like reel me back in and build me back up again. And it's just like this exhausting up and down cycle. And so once the sexual abuse started, my mental health deteriorated.
You never told your parents any of this?
No. I say that they are secondary survivors because he had them under his spell too. Like he was manipulating them and he controlled the narrative of what they saw of that relationship. And so once my mental health deteriorated and I was having panic attacks daily and, you know, couldn't get out of bed, missing lots of school because I was so depressed and wanted to end it all, like they thought he was my savior. They were like, wow, he loves her so much that he's staying through all of this. And like, he is able to calm her down or pull her out of that, you know, depressive episode. But in reality, like he is there because he caused it and he's provoking these anxiety attacks and he's doing different things.
But at the time it was happening, Whitley, were you aware of that? I mean, I know you've done lots of work, so I can tell by your language you're using, but when you go back there, were you aware that he was causing it? Or you just knew that something felt wrong? Did you think, oh, maybe he can save me too? Were some of those your thoughts as well?
Yeah, I protected him at all costs. I was in therapy for like once it got really bad, my mental health, I started going to therapy and all that stuff. And I never talked about the sexual abuse. I never talked about our relationship in therapy because I thought, you know, if I say something bad about him, my therapist is going to tell my parents and they will never let me see him again. And I was so isolated at that point that he was my only person. I no longer had any friends. I had very strained relationships with my family. And he's feeding me these narratives because of the mental, emotional abuse that like, he's the only one capable of loving me. And he's the only one capable of being there for me after seeing my worst and staying. Like, so I'm trying to protect him, even though I know this relationship is exhausting and breaking me and I'm a shell of myself. I'm also holding on to, I love him and he's the only person that's capable of loving me. And there is like religious trauma tied into all of the sexual abuse as well that I was like, you know, no one is going to want me after this. I'm damaged goods. So I have to preserve this relationship.
Yeah, this is so good to hear your experience, and especially at such a young age. You know, I was telling you, most of the women I talk to are much older, you know, and my experience was when I was in my early 30s, but I was married 18 years before I even knew I was in an abusive relationship. This is what's interesting is how you describe person, this boy is exactly, I've spoken to women all over the world. It's like we're all with the same person, right?
Yeah.
I mean, your experience and how he showed up is no different than from my husband or most of the women I've ever spoken to.
It's like they all have a script.
Definitely a script, right? And so I appreciate you being vulnerable because this is a vulnerable to valuable podcast and sharing that really intimate story and your experience. And then also how it was with your parents and how this is so hard to, you know, to even for yourself, your own mind, right? And then your parents, they're mature, but they don't see it.
Yeah.
And that makes it so much harder for the person who's going through it, where your mind is kind of going crazy, right? You're not really putting all the pieces together yet.
No. Right?
That took a while before those pieces started to come together. So you're just thinking, God, what's wrong with me?
Mm-hmm.
Is that what's wrong with me?
You know? Everything always felt like my fault because he's, you know, again, feeding me those narratives that it is. So it's like, how is this happening? Like, even when the sexual abuse started, I was like, what did I do to bring that upon myself? I didn't want that to happen. And I was just like, so confused. And I was like, I don't understand how we got to there from there to here.
Yeah.
And there was always just this disconnect of, my reality doesn't make sense. And, you know, my all of a sudden manifestation of severe anxiety and depression, it didn't make sense. It was my parents were so confused because they're like, where did this come from all of a sudden? Like, sure, I was predisposed to probably have anxiety because it runs in my family, but this had never been like anything I experienced before. It was so severe, and they were just trying to keep me alive day by day, but they're also just like confused why this all of a sudden is happening. And then once I cut him out of my life and like realized, you know, the timeline of things and how my mental health really lined up with the sexual abuse, and as it progressed and got worse, like everything made sense once I started learning what abuse looked like and mm-hmm. learning what sexual assault or sexual abuse entailed, and, you know, actually educating myself around these subjects, around consent, around all of that, because I wasn't equipped with that going into this relationship. And so I had no idea that that was even a thing.
So how did you make that leap? How did you find out? Did you finally start to talk to your therapist about it? Did she start to explain it to you, and then you did more research? How did you make that? Like I said, I was 18 years before I knew, and it was because I read a book. That's how I found out. How was it for you?
It's a little funny because he actually broke up with me, and people get really confused about that because I think he had played with me, he'd used my body, and then he was done with me. I was so broken that it wasn't fun for him anymore, and he was ready to move on, and he had already picked out his next girl. And I didn't find necessarily proof of cheating, but it was like 2 weeks after we broke up, we'd been together 2 years, he has a new girl. And so, you know, he broke up with me, but he was still stringing me along that like, we're still going to be best friends. Nothing's going to change. I just need to work on myself to be able to go on this church mission so I can be pure. And, you know, we're still going to get married, but like, I do want to date other people in the meantime. And like, I knew, right. I knew this was over. Like what he was saying was total BS, and it was devastating. And, you know, the 48 hours after he broke up with me, I had attempted suicide 4 times because it was like, I thought this was it. And I had no one after that. And it was devastating. But it was near the end of the 48 hours, and I was, you know, still hysterical and crying, and I was being physically restrained by my parents so that I wouldn't harm myself. And when I'm having a breakdown and I'm crying, I'm talking nonstop. Everything that's going through my brain is coming out. And so I'm just saying horrible things. I'm never going to be loved again. I don't want to breathe anymore. You know, my life is over. And I don't know what happened or how it happened, but something just clicked and flipped. And I was like exhausted because this hadn't been working, and I was just miserable. And so I was like, you know, we're going to try something new. So I started doing the opposite and building myself back up. I was like, you know what? I am loved and I can do this. I will be okay. And I'm a badass, and, you know, building myself back up. And so then it was like, I decided, you know what? I don't have to worry about a relationship anymore. I'm just going to focus on my relationship with myself, because I despised who I was and I needed to learn to love myself again. And I started prioritizing my mental health. You know, because before I was going to therapy, but it wasn't really doing much. That was 1 hour of my week. And I had this person still provoking all of this chaos in my life. And so then I started showing up to therapy, wanting to make a change, wanting to use those coping skills outside of the session and actually applying the different things in my life. And as soon as I started slowly making friends again, there was the first friend that I ever made. I started confiding in her in this relationship and just different things. And I I think she handled it very well. I don't think it would have been very helpful for her to outright be like, Whitley, that was abusive. You were raped. Like, I would have gotten defensive because I wasn't ready to accept it yet. And so instead, she shared her own experiences and she shared what her mom had gone through and her mom's reaction seeing her abuser years later and how triggering it was and all these different things. And it really resonated with me. I was like, that's weird because I'm kind of having those reactions seeing mm-hmm. him. And,
yeah. Mm-hmm. You know, triggers. You're having triggers.
Yes.
Yeah,
some of those things that you're mm-hmm. sharing with me resonate with me. And so then that kind of sparked a light bulb and I started reading books and listening to podcasts about what is sexual abuse? What is rape? Because before I was like, it's just, you know, by a stranger in a dark alleyway and, you know, date rape is a thing and it can happen within relationships. And I read this book about, I think it's called Why Does He Do That? Inside the Minds of Angry, Controlling Men by Lundy mm-hmm. Bancroft.
I've read that. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And yep. I swear the whole book is like highlighted and underlined and notes because it was just like all the checkboxes were being met. And so then
it was a good validation for you,
yes,
right?
Yeah. Yes. Right. Mm-hmm. Where it was like giving me the language and the vocabulary to talk about what happened to me. And so then mm-hmm. I started sharing these things that I was listening to and reading with my parents. And I was like, I don't think I was in a healthy relationship. Like, I don't think mm-hmm. that the sexual relationship was consensual ever. And, you know, sharing all of these things. And I mean, it made sense for them too, because once I shared that with them, they were like, we saw a night and day difference. You know, the you before you dated him, the you while he was in your life. And then once you cut him out of your life, it was like, we got our daughter back and it was, you're finding yourself again and you're enjoying things in your life. And, mm-hmm. you know, your anxiety and depression has like largely lifted. And so I think just being able to hear other people's stories was so validating and empowering, and also educating myself of what does this actually mean? What does this look like? And does that fit for me? That made a huge difference in my healing and my understanding.
Thank you for sharing that, because again, outlining the whole process of what you went through and how you started, it was like a little bit of self-discovery. Mm-hmm. And I think it was really fortuitous that your friend that you shared had a little bit of experience. So she knew some of the language. It could have been yeah. somebody else who said, what, you know, or they may yeah. not even understand. Oh, wow. Was it good? I mean, you don't know what somebody else's reaction would be,
yeah.
but she was just the right person to give you just a little bit of, yeah, that's not right kind of thing. And then that mm-hmm. sparked, an, you know, for you to start researching everything. So I do want to go a little bit more into your healing path, but I am yeah. curious too, before we get there. So you finally told your parents that you were sexually abused, right? Or mm-hmm. sexually assaulted, right?
Yeah.
Every episode, I offer a mini masterclass on the 11 Freedom Fulfillment Pillars. You can get the guidebook to all 11 Freedom Fulfillment Pillars right now. Simply go to vulnerabletovaluable.com and hit the subscribe button to get your copy. The only way to move forward and have an impact in your life is to get awareness of where you're at and discover what's holding you back. Following the 11 pillars, I was then able to develop strategies to create my business, become an international award-winning entrepreneur, speaker, and author, find the love of my life, and I use these pillars every day to create a fulfilled life. These are the same ones that I use with my clients. And now they are yours free. Go to vulnerabletovaluable.com and subscribe. And we're back with Whitley Rogers, a certified life coach, mental health advocate, and co-founder of End the Stigma, a mental health foundation. Did you ever press charges against the young man?
So I was still religious at the time when I broke up with him. I've since distanced myself from that because of a lot of the religious trauma and not being supported and believed within that community by leaders. So I first told my dad. He was the first person that I ever said the words out loud. I had shared a podcast episode with him about rape myths, and he had followed me out to my car, and we just sat in silence, and I think he knew it and I knew it, and I said it for the first time, and his response was so validating, you know, to get that from a man where he was like, I believe you and I'll support you in whatever you need moving forward to heal. So I first went to religious leaders because that was where I was coming from, the environment, because he was lying about everything that happened. And, you know, he was the bishop's assistant, which is like the priest, the highest person in our community. And everyone thought that he was like this great guy, but he's like the wolf in sheep's clothing. And so I wrote out my story, 18 pages. And I actually, I forgot to mention this. I became friends with two of his exes that were before me. They had reached out to me once they started hearing the rumors that he was spreading about me at school. They were like, oh, it's time. It happened to her too.
Right. And we know this routine. Yeah.
Yeah. So they reached out to me, and it was like word for word to a T. What I experienced is what they experienced. And he was just like fine tuning his skills, girlfriend after girlfriend. And so, you know, they also wrote their stories. So we wrote out our stories. I wrote it in 18 pages, and I first shared it with my parents. That was the first time they understood or knew to the full extent of like what went on. And then I sent it to, or we all sent it. My parents wrote a letter too after reading mine. And then I had the other girlfriends.
So the other girlfriends had not submitted anything. They just kept it to themselves, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Shame.
They were so young because I was 15.
Right.
So they were younger.
They were even younger.
When they were dating him. Yeah.
When they were dating him. Oh, interesting. How that pressure of somebody good in the community, you can't rock the boat, you know, we're doing something wrong. Okay. Yeah. Go ahead.
So we had all these letters and stories, and we compiled them and brought them to three leaders in our community. And we're like, look, this is not the guy you think he is. And this is what's been happening to all of us. Like, it's not just one girl. This is a pattern of behavior. And at first we thought we were getting such good support that these leaders believed us. And they were like, your guys' safety is most important to us. And then once they talked to him and talked to his parents, it was like something shifted and they no longer believed us and they no longer supported us. And I was getting counseling from my own bishop, and he's actually a lawyer, which thinking back, I'm like, this was really inappropriate and not okay. But he was advising me not to press charges. And he was like, you know, that's not going to be very healing for you because then you're just going to have to rehash out everything that you've been through. And it's just going to be he said versus she said, and you're not going to get anywhere. And so I had these voices from influential people in my life telling me it's not worth it. Don't do it. He doesn't deserve that. It's not going to be good for you.
Interesting, right? Interesting. Right. How they perception of other people and who they're protecting. This is why I think your story is so important, because I've seen films and everything else, especially with, you know, young that age group.
Yeah.
And how damaging it is, how they go, football players or their stars, we've got to protect them, you know, the team's got to win. And it doesn't matter. It's like you're not a human being. You don't matter. It's like, what is the message there? Who are we trying to protect? He deserves to be protected.
I had one person when I ended up opening up on social media, they were like, you shattered his life and his reputation. And I was like, what about him shattering my life? Right. Like, I have to carry this for the rest of my life. I'm going to have this trauma and triggers come up. Like, how does that make sense that he just gets to walk free and, you know, continue living his life unaffected while I have to pick up the pieces of the mess that he made. So yeah, we shared with the religious leaders, and then they flipped their support and were like, they kind of doubted our stories and went through all the different things of like, you know, were they just regretting having sex outside of marriage? And, you know, they're just saying these claims. And, you know, you could see that they had been manipulated by my abuser and his family once they talked to them and got, you know, their side of the story. So then I decided, well, regardless of the religious stuff, I felt that it was my purpose to speak up about this. I felt I survived this relationship, and I survived all of these suicide attempts for a reason. And I lived to tell the tale, and I'm going to speak up about this because it could help other girls that are in my place, like, realize something that's happening to them or realize before they get into something like this. And I just want to spread awareness and I want to share my story. And so I felt like this overwhelming amount of peace and clarity that that's what I was going to do. So I started, that's where my podcast was born from that moment. And I shared a hashtag no filter story where I just kind of briefly shared what I have a part one with, like, my anxiety and depression. And then, like, a year later, I did a part two about my abusive relationship. And when I shared that and then announced that I would be starting a podcast to continue sharing my story and sharing other people's stories, I got a letter from my religious leaders that were very upset, very angry, saying, you know, this is not Christ-like. You know, we want to air all of your sins and your baggage out in the open for other people. Like, how dare you do that to him? And, like, telling me this is not the way to heal. Like, this isn't going to be healing for you. When I was like, this does feel like the most healing thing for me. And just expressing their disapproval. And that was kind of a really disheartening moment where I was like, I am not believed here. I am not supported here. And this isn't a safe or, you know, healthy environment for me to be in anymore. And then that's when I transitioned leaving the high demand religion that I grew up in. And then after I went public, I got a threatening letter from his family because his dad is a very prominent lawyer here. You know, his face is on buses and billboards and TV commercials. And so I got a threatening letter to sue me for defamation. And I got my own lawyer and responded back. And basically, I mean, the lawyer was amazing and didn't charge me anything. He was like, I think your story is powerful and what you're doing is powerful. And so, you know, I'm going to just help you however I can. And so he was able to send a letter back and basically lining it up for them. Like, is that a good idea? Like, I can still press charges. And I also have two other girls with the same stories. So it's like three against one, and kind of lining all of that up. And then I never got anything back. I never heard anything. I never got sued by them. So I just continued sharing my story since then.
Good for you. I'm really glad to hear that you're on that track. It takes a lot of courage to really speak up and to share that. So what was your journey for self-forgiveness and self-compassion? Mm. That's such a healing part of our journey. So what was yours? Maybe some of the steps that you can actually share that somebody else can actually do.
Yeah. So I am a big advocate for therapy. I have gone to lots of therapy. I went to an EMDR therapist that specializes in trauma and went through those sessions to be able to process everything that happened and, you know, lessen the triggers or the amount of triggers that I have. And then I also see an individual therapist that has helped me work through the victim blaming, the internalized victim blaming, a lot of that stuff that I still see today. But I think even educating myself on what abuse looks like, what abusers, what tactics they use, what their characteristics are like, and all that different stuff. And also hearing other people's stories is healing in itself for me, because I have to realize that what I know now, I did not know even like a speck of that when I was 15. And maybe if I did know, I wouldn't have gotten in that situation. Maybe I still would, because he's a predator and a raging narcissistic abuser, and he is really good at what he does. And so like realizing that I didn't know. This was my very first relationship. How could I know? I didn't have anything to compare it to. I didn't have a healthy relationship experience to compare it to. And I think he took advantage of that, that, you know, he's older. He has more experience. He's going to teach me the ropes. And, mm-hmm. you know, if I voice some doubt that like, I don't think this dynamic is very healthy, he's like, you know, no, if you loved me, you'd do this, or yeah. those different manipulative things. But just like being able to understand what this looks like was very healing, because it's validating and it's empowering. But then also hearing other people's stories, I realized like, I don't blame them. I don't think it's their fault. And I think it is their abuser's fault. And so that's also true for me. It doesn't mean it's my fault, or I yeah. did specific things to bring this upon myself or attract yeah. this. Like,
that's right.
I am not responsible for his actions. And it's not my fault for trusting someone and loving someone and, you know, wanting to be in a relationship with someone. He just took advantage of those things, but that wasn't me. That wasn't negative things. Like, I should be able to trust people. I should be able to give love to people and not have that used against me or taken advantage of and different things like that.
Yeah, that's really good, because when we go into these relationships, we're not expecting that. Of course, you know, you want to be loved. It's normal to have a human connection. And I like your attitude too, which is hard for a lot of women to get there. You're not blaming yourself, not judging yourself. It's like, I should be able to go into a relationship and, yeah. and expect it's going to be nice. And then moving forward with that, that's the basis. Good, healthy relationship. You go in trusting, you go in loving, yeah. you go in with open arms, and to continue on that open path to create the love between two people.
Yeah.
I'm curious, how do you set your boundaries, or like, what kind of boundaries do you have? Like, now, you know, if somebody does this, whatever this is, mm-hmm. I will do this. Do you have any of those that you can share?
Yeah, I think boundaries can be big and scary for a lot of people, but I think it is giving someone a guidebook on how to treat you and how to show up in that relationship, instead of leaving them guessing on what's good or bad, or what do they want from me, what don't they want. Mm-hmm. Being able to communicate those boundaries is the best gift you could give to yourself, but also for that person that wants to be in a relationship with you.
What yeah. are some of the ones that you have now that you've learned through this experience?
So I would say believe patterns and believe actions over words. And so if someone crosses a boundary or does something that's maybe triggering for me or upsets me, and I've communicated that and let them know like, hey, that wasn't okay for me, or I was very unsettled after that happened. I couldn't stop thinking about it, or I shut down, you know, communicating what happened. And if that just continues happening, that they still are crossing that boundary or doing that thing that like, are they actually wanting to honor those boundaries? Are they wanting to make me feel safe? Are they wanting to make me feel respected and loved? Because I'm trying to express to them, like, this is how I feel supported. This is how I feel respected. This is how I feel loved. And if they are continuously missing that mark, then like, are they genuinely wanting to love me or to support me or to respect me? I think impact over intention is big, because we can have good intentions, or we can think, I'm a good person, I respect them so much, I support you no matter what. Mm-hmm. But if you're doing that in what you think is supportive or what you think is respectful, but there's that disconnect of like, that doesn't make me feel loved. That doesn't make me feel respected. And I need you to show up in this way instead. I think if someone genuinely wants to be there for you and wants to have that relationship, then they will respond to those boundaries in a way that makes you feel heard and makes you feel like they are showing up, wanting to actually make a change or show up differently the next time. But if they're just, you know, bulldozing right over that over and over again, then that's definitely a red flag for me that I'm like, what are their intentions actually?
Yeah. What are their intentions actually? And then, so what's the step am I going to take? You know, first I tell them, and then if they still do it, okay, maybe this is just not the right relationship for me. Right.
Yeah.
So it's really easy to, you know, slip into what I call people pleasing, which I'm sure you're familiar with, right?
Yes.
So, right. You know, go into people pleasing. Well, I'll just give them one more chance. The women I coach, it's like, it only takes one time. And I think that's the problem. Women, you know, because they're not feeling secure in themselves and what their own value. So they still keep discounting their value. I mean, even within my age. Okay. So this happens of the whole spectrum of women just kind of like, you know, dimming them and dumbing themselves down.
Mm-hmm.
Just like, well, making excuses. So for me, if you have to make an excuse for their behavior, that is a huge red flag.
Yeah.
Because that's what you talked about your story, right? You know, you were protecting him. You were making excuses. It's just, that's what we do, right? That's what the women do. We make excuses because, well, they're not bad all the time.
Yeah.
But we have to be aware of that. This has been really good. I so appreciate you sharing your stories and what you've gone through and how you are showing up. So just before we end, share us a little bit about the End the Stigma Mental Foundation.
Yeah.
End the Mental Stigma. I'm missing all of it.
Oh, no worries. It's called End the Stigma, and it's a mental health foundation that I'm a co-founder of. My mom is actually a founder of a sister foundation called The Emily Effect, and that's a mental health foundation for moms with like postpartum anxiety or depression. And then they branched off and created End the Stigma for teens' mental health or youth and their mental health. And once I started prioritizing my mental health and showing up to therapy, actually being an active role, an active participant, I kind of took over End the Stigma because they were like, we want teens or young people to lead this because it will probably be heard better if adults are talking to teens. They're like, yeah, whatever. But if their peers are talking to them about these things or opening up online about their own mental health, then it's probably going to be received a lot better because then it's, you know, it's cool to talk about your mental health or go to therapy or, you know, those different things. And so I started leading End the Stigma, and I started 4 support groups here in Las Vegas with my own therapist. They're 3-4 teens that are going through different struggles, mental health, mental illness struggles. Mm-hmm. And then the 4th support group is for parents with kids that are struggling with these things.
That's beautiful. Do you have a website for that foundation?
Yeah. Endthestigma.org. And then the same social media handles.
So we'll put that in the show notes too. So people can look for it. And, you know, there might be parents who are listening to this and they can go for their children because the more we can get this information out, the better. So I want to end our conversation here by asking you, what does love is kind mean to you, Whitley?
I love that. So I think you can love someone unconditionally and just, you know, have an outpouring of love for them and respect. But the relationship, it is conditional because you have those boundaries and you have those standards and how you're going to be treated, and that there are certain things that are like, you need that, or it's a game changer. You're not going to be in a relationship with them if they're not able to meet these needs. And so I think thinking that love and relationships are equal being unconditional, it's just a slippery slope, because then again, you're going to get into those relationships where you make the excuses and you make all of the justifications, or you let your boundaries down because you just love them unconditionally and they love you unconditionally, when in reality, that isn't necessarily a healthy dynamic.
Yeah. And I think that was great. I love that, because it's not healthy, right? It's always check in. Is this relationship healthy?
Yeah.
you know, you have to be kind to yourself first, right?
Yeah.
Well, thank you so much for your time, Whitley. This was fabulous. You're going to have a great future. You're going to help so many more people in your life. They're going to be blessed to be working with you. So thank you for your time.
Yeah, thank you for allowing me the space to share my story. I appreciate it.
Absolutely.
That's it for today's episode. Head on over to vulnerabletovaluable.com and subscribe to the show. When you subscribe, you'll instantly get a special ebook. And when you subscribe to the show and post a review to iTunes, you'll be entered into a drawing to win a free consult with me. Plus, your subscribing will help our mission to inspire 100 million women worldwide to heal and move forward from their abusive relationships. That's vulnerabletovaluable.com, the podcast that guides you to reclaim your voice, value, confidence, and courage.